Almost Live from Nigel, it's time for this week's Hardman Newspapers podcast.
Hello, I'm Andy Dalrymple, and welcome to this week's Hardman Newspapers podcast, almost live from editorial meeting room, Nigel. Coming up this week, we've got a veritable feast of stuff for you, including cuts to children's speech therapy, plans for a new cycling route in Onken, and a couple of our usual weekly features to try and give you a taster of the news that has been hitting the headlines in our print titles, and of course online at iamtoday.co.im. To do this, I'm joined by newshands Jess Ward.
Hello.
And Sam Turn.
Hello.
But no Katie Kitchener this week, Jess, no?
No, she's not. She's over in South America.
South America?
She's
sure
living
about
it up.
That?
Yes, I'm very sure. and so she's, we're all very jealous, but I do feel like, you know, one of my limbs is gone, really, from this table.
But she does bring a lot to the table, as it were. Sam, she's in Colombia, I think we should point out. Jess being quite vague about her general place at this time.
Yeah, sounds like she's having a great time.
I personally wish that she's probably trying to track down Tino Asprilla or maybe Carlos Valderrama, some of the Colombian legends from the 80s and 90s football team. I'd very much doubt it, though, don't you?
You're showing your age there.
Yeah. I'm hitting all the target demographics at once. Right, everyone's week been good, Jess?
Yeah, it's been full on again.
Full on?
Yeah, never ends.
Highlight of the week?
Oh, I don't know. Probably just getting home and just like relaxing because I'm so done. This week has been harder in terms of like January so far.
Okay.
So.
Sam, you're away this weekend. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, grand.
There you go. London, isn't it? Big smoke? The other capital?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, well, you two are both in chatty mood today, so let's crack on. To quote famous source for our concern, Lloyd Grossman, it's time to deliberate, cogitate and digest this week's Manx News. Starting off, Sam, with a story about a cycle route, but it's maybe not going to be here anytime soon, is it?
No, it's part of the government's plans to get people more active in their daily lives. They termed it active travel. It's to encourage people who can get into work, you know, by cycling and walking or running to do so. And I think at heart, it's a very good idea because, you know, we do all need to get more exercise. You know, there's the few amongst us who do it plenty enough, but would it do any of us harm to walk a couple of miles into work or home? Probably not. It'd do us a lot of good. Mm. But so this week we were trying to work out exactly where this route was going to be because they've said it's going to be Upper Douglas and Willesden and Governors Hill and Onken. That's going to be part of this one. But we don't know where.
No, it's been clouded in a bit of secrecy. You've obviously spoken to Department of Infrastructure and Douglas Council, haven't you, to try and get to the bottom of this. We've had a bash of what we think these routes are going to be. There's a lovely graphic in today's Manx Independent on page 3. But yes, there's still a little bit of a cloud in secrecy, aren't there?
Well, we know in Douglas it's going to link up at the top of Nobles Park, and Willesden is going to use the traffic lights that are currently there and go across Glencluttery Road and down through the park on the St. Ninian's Road. Mm-hmm. It's where, besides that, you can go from, because obviously you've got all the way along the prom, you've got the walkway, which the department have confirmed will be continued as part of a route in. But I just looked out of Onken, and I just can't see where. And I spoke to the surveyor in Onken, and for the Onken commissioners, and he said the same thing, that the village doesn't really lend itself to having cycle lanes
it's
in it.
It's quite narrow, isn't it? I think it was the point you were making, and I think the surveyor made it as well, is that if you had a bus in Onken, it pretty much takes up a whole lane. If you want to then add a bit on the extra side to put a cycle lane in, it's going to be tough to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Without losing the pavement, you're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can go into the shared spaces of using it down the middle, but I think until perhaps, as a society, we get more respect for cyclists, I think that's going to be a problem to do, is just implement a cycle lane in the middle of a road.
Jess, no, obviously, this is part of the 2019 is very much, we're saving the planet this year, aren't we? We're recyclable plastics, which we
issues.
Talked about last week, you know, refillable, you know, getting
yeah,
the water
getting
bottle and
refills.
Stuff like that. Active travel is going to be form part of that. We're using less car journeys and bus journeys and stuff like that.
Yeah, cutting down carbon emissions.
You live down south, so you can't really walk into work, but if
no,
you lived
a
bit closer,
a
you used to walk into work, didn't you, when you lived in Dublin?
Yes, I did, yeah, and I just feel it's quite nice getting out into the fresh air and starting off your day that way. Yeah. But from Bellisella, no. Not quite. I have thought, actually, it would be quite nice to cycle into work, but the roads are quite scary, I think, here in the Isle of Man.
But this is a question that's batted about a lot. You know, I think, personally, as a society, because we obviously have a massive amount of local talent that go into professional cycling, we are potentially a bit more respectful of cyclists and maybe people, drivers in England or Scotland or Wales. But I don't know, it's interesting to get your guys' viewpoints on it. I don't know. What do you think, Jess?
Well, I don't know. I think it's because it's such a big debate here. Maybe the fact that we're all, I mean, there's a lot of negativity towards cyclists that makes me nervous.
In the Isle of Man?
Yeah, definitely. I hear a lot about it. I mean, I wrote a piece about this, actually, active travel, and I spoke to cyclists who... Some people cycle in from Peel, some from Bouldrine, and they've had incidents. There's not many, but looking at the comments on the website, something that you shouldn't really do as a reporter, but so many people are negative about it, and it's just... It's like, what? It's horrible.
Sam, you nodding your head there, you agree with all this, yeah?
Well, it's a two-way street.
Good pun.
But no, I just think that you have the combination of the drivers could be a lot more patient, and then but you do get instances of where cyclists are two or three across in a road, and it does get to people. So there is fault on both sides. Mm. I think motorists have to be a lot more respectful of cyclists. I mean, you wouldn't want to be going down the Richmond with some of the speeds that people do. But at the same time, there is also the element of it. Well, you have to sort of coexist and do and be on the road. And yeah, I think both sides can improve their attitude towards each other.
Jess, this is a proposed cycle route at the moment. Is that the way forward? We sort of take them, the cyclists, it's not a shared space anymore. They've got their own space, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good way to go forward. I mean, I've recently reported about horse riders and how they are wanting their own pathways. So they're thinking of putting a campaign in place for that, just because they don't actually want to be on the roads. And I wonder if that's the same for cyclists, if they want their own routes. Mm. I know the old railway from Peel to Douglas is quite popular.
With both cyclists and horse riders,
yeah, definitely.
Isn't it?
But that's probably because it's safer.
But I suppose it all comes down to the bottom line, though, doesn't it, Sam? To do this, it's going to take a massive change in our infrastructure, and that doesn't come cheaply, does it?
Well, no, I mean, again, with Onken, is a simple point. Where do you run it through?
Yeah.
I mean, and around St. Denis.
Without widening the roads, altering, you know, where people live, almost.
Because you have to
cut into their property.
I'd say, like, around St. Denis, at the top of Bray Hill there, you've got one of the busiest junctions on the island. It'd be the same at the bottom of the Quarter Bridge. I think it's just, I mean, we have the cycle lane on Peel Road, and I don't know, personally, I don't see that many people ever using it. You do see, like, you see the occasional cyclists you see every morning, the ones you recognise, but I don't think that they're growing in the numbers that perhaps they thought it would have done.
But is it not, and we're going to talk more about chickens and eggs later, but is it not like the chicken and the egg situation? If there were more cycle lanes, people would ride more. And at the moment, maybe as Jess has said herself, she does want to ride because that safe space is not there.
Yeah,
but to do that, then you can't just say we're going to set up cycle lanes to do it. You have to spend the money, you have to do it right, and you have to set up proper areas. You can't just hope this is going to work.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I look at, for instance, Peel Road. If you go along Peel Road, the bus stops are where they swerve into the cycle lane. I wouldn't want to go cycle along Peel Road.
That's a good point. Before we move on, could this be a potential tourism route for us? You know, obviously we're trying to get active travel for our existing population, but could it attract people to come to the island, Jess? Would you come over for a cycling holiday if there was more cycle routes and such like?
I think so. Like you said, we've got cycling greats over here. We've got Mark Cavendish. And so maybe, yeah, I think that could be a way in. And you look at the promenade, they use that for like segways and so why not?
Yeah, because of course there's loads of off-road trails for the mountain biking, so
yeah,
maybe just
right.
Try and make up the road cyclists to be level with that.
Okay.
Sam, thanks for that. Now, Jess, we've got this next story is about a cut to island speech therapy and language therapy for kids.
Yes.
It's great. I read the story. It was in the Indiana Examiner this week, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's been quite a hotly discussed topic. So basically the Health Department announced in December last year that there would be cuts to the island's speech and language therapy service for kids. Now, this is because at the moment they've got just over 300 kids and the demand has just increased by, doubled really. And they've only got two staff members to cope with all of that because one has gone on maternity leave. Now, the cuts include the service no longer taking new referrals for children in Key Stage 2, so that's age 7 to 11 and above, except for those who have stammering. And there will be no visiting therapists to some schools in the spring. And I was speaking to some parents because parents have come forward and said this is ridiculous, as they would, and they're wanting to get more staff because there's too to look after that amount of kids is just...
Well, I read your story in the Indie this week, and it was one of the parents was saying, obviously, speech is vital. This is how you express yourself.
Yeah.
So if a child is struggling with that...
Mm. Especially at that key stage in your life, you know, you're wanting to... you're learning, but you're also socialising. But anyway, one of these... one of the parents... She said that she figured out that her child, with these cuts in place, mm-hmm. would only get 6 sessions in a year. And this is a 5-year-old. And she said, I simply cannot see how my daughter's speech can improve with the extremely limited time she is to spend with a speech therapist this year. And Garth Commissioner, Garth MHK, Daphne Kane, she says that the cuts will have a horrible impact on these children and their learning, and I think she's quite right in saying that.
So what have the Department of Health said? Have they come
back to this was something? This was discussed internal this month, and the Health Minister, he said that they're going to conduct a review. Mm-hmm. A review needs to take place.
Yeah, and so hopefully... They may be able to adjust some funding to get more members of staff and just review how many kids are actually using the service.
Yeah, that's it. So watch the space.
Yes. So if you want to hear more on that story, it was in both The Independent and Examiner this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So they can go to page 4 in The Independent or page 26 in The Examiner.
All right, changing the place completely. It just feels weird. This is Katie's usual thing. Our tremendous hold the line feature, which is our feature where we get, if you're on the hold on the phone and you get, that company puts on some hold music, we want to hear what you've heard, basically. So it started off a couple of weeks ago that someone had rang, I think it was Kestrel Insurance, and Toto's seminal hit, Hold the Line, was their music. And we've actually found out that companies are quite clever about what music they use. I think someone had Rag and Bone Man, Don't Put the Blame on Me, was one of their songs.
Yeah.
And there'd be all sorts of various, very odd instrumental mixes when they don't want to pay the full licensing, I think. But yes, so we started this hashtag Hold the Line on social media. Now, I went to check if we'd had any entries this week, Sam, and you're a very politically aware man. Did you know that the hashtag Hold the Line had another meaning? Now, your expression has changed, so I'm guessing you didn't know this. So I went on to Twitter before just to see if we had any entries from the Manx listening public.
What did you find?
And I found that Hold the Line is being used by Trump supporters with his wall campaign. So he wants to build a wall between America and Mexico. Everyone seems to know about this. Yeah. And Hold the Line is what they're using in their campaign trying to get the wall. So... It was suggested we may want to hold the line, but I think we'll just battle on because we're going to be the positive force on that.
I think so, yeah. You know, trying to break away from that meaning.
So the reason I brought it up is if you do search Hold the Line on Twitter or any form of social media or embodied by Trump supporters, that's why. It's not that they're trying to engage in our Hold the Line feature, basically. So anyway, that brings it back to if you have... been on hold this week, maybe you've been ringing a doctor's surgery or I don't know the dentist or maybe even Tesco or whatever, please let us know what you heard this week, and you can do that by using the Hold the Line hashtag. We will do our best to sift it through it, or you can contact us at IOM News Podcast on Twitter and of course on Instagram, I believe.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Right, next story, Jess. And it's tribute supported to a true Manxman, Brian Stoll, this week. Now, we do our own Manx Word of the Week, and it's probably largely down to this man, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So, Dr. Brian Stoll, he was a respected teacher and a nuclear physicist by trade. And he dedicated his time using his formidable intellect to preserve the Manx language. So, hundreds across the island have expressed their sorrow after hearing the news of his death, which was on Friday last week. And he was just aged, he was aged 82. Mr. Towell was said to have helped bridge the gap between the last native speakers and the revival of the Manx language. And he actually was awarded the Tinwood Honour in 2010 for this and for making a lasting contribution to the Manx culture. So he went into schools and he was the first Manx language officer in the island. and he published many books, CDs and videos to ensure that the language continued. Steve Roden, president of Tynwald, he sent in his condolences, and he said that Brian was an outstanding Manxman and the island has lost a great son.
Yeah, and it was a great tribute. I think it was Mike Wade.
Mike Wade, yeah,
in today's Independent speech. He spoke to Brian's daughter, Bridget, and a few of the other leading lights, including Phil Gorn, who's now sort of taken over some of Brian's...
That's right, and Adrian Kane from Culture Bannon.
So it's well worth the read. That's in today's this week's Manx Independent. And we talk about it. We had the story, a few weeks ago, Sam, wasn't it? I think it was the Teesside Gazette. It had published a graphic or something saying that the Manx language was dead, which UNESCO, they actually categorically said that the Manx language was dead until... Through Brian's hard work and others, I'm sure.
Yeah, students from Bun School.
Yeah, have now it's on its feet again. And as you say, Sam, we did the piece a couple of weeks ago. Because kids learning it is their first language almost in school, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very unbelievably impressive what he did. When you look at it. I mean, he worked a lot with the Celtic League through Ireland, who of course were the ones who really drove the recovery of the Manx language. You got to remember that at the time. The government weren't interested in preserving the Manx language. A lot of people weren't. And it was through the Irish president, De Valera, and it come onto the island, and you had people like Dr. Stoll, who really were the ones who say, well, no, we have to protect this. This is us. Mm. And you got to look at it and say, I mean, look, it's gone from being where they said, the last speaker's dead, it's a dead language, move on, to your point now, it's on all the road signs. We've got Alice in Wonderland, the Gruffalo, they've all been translated into Manx. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And his daughter said that he not only fought for the language and for the survival of the language, but he also had to fight against people who, you know, just didn't care about the language and just thought, you know, just let it die.
And as Sam says, it's more than language now. It's a cultural identity has almost been re-established through it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, people are, I'd say, probably proud to be Manx again, and that's probably down to Brian. So, you know, it's a big loss. I believe the funeral's next week, isn't it, on Monday?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So there's more on that in this week's Independent, a lovely tribute from Mike Wade featuring a lot of...
definitely worth a read.
Yeah. The next story, Sam, which was on the front page of this week's Independent, is about the prom. Now, anyone that's been down there for either trying to get to Wonkin or just for a run on the prom, there's flipping cones everywhere. And we are aware of this. This is their grand scheme to redevelop the prom. But it's causing a few issues with some of the business down at that sort of Queen's prom end, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you've got the... I mean, obviously, the promenade that needed doing, and the work is now underway, and we're going to have this great brand spanking new thing. It's going to be fantastic. But in the meantime, there's a few businesses down towards the Queen's Prom end. We've got Melody Crosby from New Manila contacted us, who said that it's having a real detrimental effect on her business because people can't get parking space outside the front of the store anymore. And you had Vanity Fair as well, they spoke to us, and Crosley Travel. They've all said the same thing, that the complete lack of parking available in that area is now having a real, real negative effect on them. So they spoke to us, and we got onto the department and asked about what was being done to try and help these businesses, and they essentially suggested that people could park elsewhere, which is interesting really, because the businesses have all made the same point, that it doesn't seem that they don't feel they've been listened to and that a business assessment wasn't done. And Melody made the very good point of, when we set out, for instance, to do this podcast, we had a plan of what it needs to do to be a success and what are the potential failings or problems we could fall into. And she's saying that from a business point of view, they don't seem to have done that. And the department basically said they're going to try and listen to them and help them out and sort alternative parking, which I believe has been done up Switzerland Road. But that's during the day, whereas with New Manila, it's a restaurant for the evening.
Yeah.
And she's still got the same problem. So it's just... It's very unfortunate, because I started thinking about it. As you go into the summer, we're going to have the coaches start coming over fairly soon, really.
Yeah.
And... where do they go? Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got
to park down there.
It's like you've got the Hydro, for instance, and all the other ones along the prom, where you get the coach parties come off the boat and they park up, get everyone checked in, get the bags off. But if they do that now, they're going to block up the entirety of the street. And where else are they going to go? So it's not just these businesses that are going to suffer if this carries on the way it is looking like it's going to.
And this is a big project as well, Simon. You know, it's going to take months and months and months.
Easily 2 years of this, all the way along the prom. And you know, you got to think as well, TT, what happens then? You know, every TT you see it, there's bikes parked all the way along on the pavement. I just I don't
And that obviously, that during TT, when the roads are shut, that's the main route between...
Yeah, apparently they're not going to do work on it during TT, but right. That leaves me even more curious, because that just means we're going to have a hole in the ground.
Well, I presume, they will maybe won't be as severe as that. But yeah, it does raise some interesting points. And as you say, I know when they did the Peel Road development, they seemed to do quite a lot of consultation with the milestone businesses. I don't know how well that went, but it's obviously, it's a tough one. You know, they've got to juggle that. They've got to juggle and actually carrying out the work and still, helping the people that are going to be the businesses that are on the road. It.
And in the long run, when that is all done, it's going to look amazing, and they'll probably get loads of people coming in.
Ironically, actually, the businesses have said they have the same problem, because they're losing parking along the prom.
Right.
With these plans, which I've had my opinion on the plans in the past. I just don't think that this is going to be the all singing, all dancing it could have been. And I think it's a shame, actually, because I think it could have a real detrimental effect on these businesses. If they're saying to us, we are having these problems, and there must be other businesses who are looking at this saying, that's going to be us. Mm. So,
well, as I say, the story will continue to develop. It was on the front page of this week's Manx Independent. I'm sure it'll be going online shortly, where I'm sure we'll have lots of reaction from our lovely readers. So, moving on to the sports story of the week, which involves Derry City, Sam. So, a League of Ireland team. I think they won the League Cup in Ireland last season. Mm-hmm. They're coming over to the Isle of Man next week for a 4-day training camp, which culminates with a friendly against the Isle of Man FA's men's team. I don't wish to promote another podcast on this podcast, but we had the Isle of Man FA men's team manager Paul Jones in to do the Manx 40 pod yesterday, which is, of course, available on Audioboom as well as all the good podcast platforms.
Is that the one starring Dave Norton?
That's the one starring Dave Norton. He's the talent behind the thing. But yeah, Paul came in yesterday to talk about the trip. He says it's a great opportunity. Hopefully, will lead to other professional teams coming over in the future. They, of course, played Wolves under 23s in October, beat them 2-0, which was a bit of a surprise, but by all accounts, a great performance. So Derry will be a different test again on Wednesday. So that's Wednesday evening at the Bowl, half past 7. £3 in. Not bad, I don't think. £1 for concessions. As I say, you can listen to the podcast. There'll be the squad will be confirmed in next week's Examiner and a match report. I'll be there and tweeting from @MaxFootyPod on Wednesday night if you can't make it down to the Bowl.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Sam, this week in history.
Yep, we're hopping in the door in and going all the way back to 1954.
Yes, I don't know if we've gone this deep before, have we?
I don't think we have, actually.
No, it was 2014 last week, wasn't it? So this is we've gotten the DeLorean and set it to 1954, January 23rd to be exact. Quite interestingly, the paper came out on Saturday.
Yeah, it was the Isle of Man Weekly Times.
Yeah, so, but yes, there's... As usual with a paper of a certain vintage, there is tons of stories on the front page.
Lots happening.
A lot's happening. I think the two main images are quite interesting. So one of them is a cartoon which relates to the main story, which I'm sure Sam's going to go to in a minute. Plus, there's a wedding picture.
Okay, on the front.
On the front page. So the happy couple were Mr. Melvin Barcroft and Miss Kathleen Wade of Blath. So if you're related to that.
Photo.
Yeah, with a lovely 3-tier cake, wasn't it? So Sam, though, the big story is about eggs.
Yes, Manx eggs. At the time, there was the front page headline is "Eggs Go Rotten for Want of Buyers," which
the punchy.
Our eggs are the dearest in Europe. It was they were charging. It was 5.5 old pence for the price of eggs. Oh, at the time in England, they were 3 old pence.
Wow.
And it was leading to a lot of problems on the island.
Well, I read the story. It's actually got like 3 or 4 paragraphs. Well, actually, no, it does go on. It seems to go on to the very end. But I hadn't actually realised that was the same story. That's how confusing the layout
it's just
is.
It's like one little column.
But it was something to do with the hangover of war and rationing, wasn't it? And there was still some sort of, I'm looking for the word, is the protection in place over what the sales could be made, what the price of eggs, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because this is how the island itself took a longer time and a way to come off rationing than England did.
Yeah.
And for instance, they're saying here about how, in the story it's saying about how machinery that should have been on the island wasn't, and otherwise rationing could have been done in October of 53, but it went on, and they believe this could have continued until February 55.
So it's another year after this paper was printed. And it was also, they talk about meat prices or deterioration. Right. I'll have another run at that one. Rationing.
Meat derationing, yeah, coming at last.
Yeah, so that was obviously, again, so this is 1954, 9 years after the war ended.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to look back at it. I mean, my dad had, he was born in 49, he had a sweet rationing book.
Wow.
Which kids got from the day they were born, so he was very popular in his house, because obviously as a two-day-old baby, he wasn't having any sweets, but his older brother used to take them.
Aww.
So one of the other main stories on the front page, I saw, Jess, was about a casino.
Okay.
Have you seen this? So there's a plan, right? And it was a London underwriter from Lloyd's, Mr. Michael Joy, 39 years old, and he was willing to spend £10 million.
Oh my goodness.
On a new complex, which included, I think it had a swimming pool, a hotel, and then he's just decided to throw a casino in at the end as well. But £10 million in 1954 is a tremendous amount.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
He was actually. It's quite funny. It says they couldn't be contacted for comment or something. There was a, because he was now in France. He was expected back in London next week. So, but obviously, Ireland's latest plan for Ireland's development.
I really like the one here. Actually, Australia's TT team.
Yep,
they've. Can't make out the names of it, unfortunately.
Well,
the script is so small in here.
Yeah, it's very small. I just spoke to the Oracle, John Watson, in Sports and he reckons in 1954, this is all off the top of his head, which just shows you what an absolute TT stato he is. He reckons that year, in 1954, it was an Australian rider that won the senior. So it could be this. As you say, the text is a little bit smudged, so we can't work it out. But just by quirk of fate, breaking news, if you go onto IOM today, David Johnson, who is an Australian rider, has just signed for Honda to ride for this year. So,
big news.
Just shows it, doesn't it? But yeah, so there's 1954, the Isle of Man Weekly Times front page. Did you touch on the cartoon?
I think the cartoon's fantastic.
So the main image on the front page that week was, now we tend to have a picture, don't we? Or whatever. This week it was a cartoon of two hens.
I quite like it. I think we should bring that back.
Sam, do you want to read what it says?
So it's a big fat Manx hen and a slightly skinnier English hen. And the in the background it says surplus of eggs, thousands of them, and more to come. And it's the English hen saying, "They tell me, dear, that yours are the dearest eggs in the world. Even your chicks don't say cheap, cheap anymore. They say dear, dear."
Brilliant pun. Brilliant pun.
I think we'll put that on Twitter, can't we? Yeah. We've got that on Twitter, yeah. You can see that.
What I found interesting was in the story itself, it said that housewives were doing a buying strike.
Because it was so expensive.
Yeah, but it's just the fact that it's like housewives, like now, like such changed times.
1954. Before we move on to our word of the week, which we're still going to press ahead with, even though Katie is in. Where is she, Jess?
Columbia, South America, okay.
The advert of the week, a couple of them have been cut off, but there's a one for the Sefton Hotel on the front corner, and then there's the famous furnishing fabrics from RC Kane Limited of Duke Street. And there's a lovely picture of a drape.
on a couch.
Yeah. And it said 1954 designs now in shop.
Draperies, that's a word you don't get enough nowadays.
Loose covers. What's a loose cover?
I have no idea.
Would that be like,
is that what's on the couch there?
A loose cover?
Is it? Does it go over a couch?
Over the couch.
You know how, like,
or the chair.
In your grandparents' like house they have like covers. We don't do that nowadays, do we?
No.
Where it's all about like the doilies and...
It's all about the loose covers in 1954. Year of the loose covers. Right, this week in history, obviously we've talked about Brian Stolen and the tremendous work he's done to revive the Manx language. This is our very small part of trying to continue his work. And each week we try and feature a Manx word. Last week, Jess, it was... I'm going to put you on the spot because we've all butchered it
horrendously. I know, because it was so bad in the last one.
Yeah.
Okay, no pressure. Kishtagen?
Sam? You want to have a bash at that one?
Kishtagen.
Yeah.
That's too German, isn't it?
I did the same thing last week, and I was very Germanic with my pronunciation of Kishtagen. I don't think you need to shout it. Kishtagen?
I'm really questioning it.
The guys at Culture Bannon did give us the audio clip, so I'm sure we can put that in again now.
Kishtagen.
Kishtagen, what do you think it means, guys? Nothing.
I have no idea.
I'm going to say it means chest of drawers because it says it here.
Shut up,
Sam. Katie went a bit off-piste, as it were, last week. And it, so those of you who are stumbling around for the Manx word for chest of drawers, it's kishtagging.
There you go.
Anyway, this week's word. Who wants to have a crack at this one? Sam?
Pitchin?
Isn't it pitchin?
Pitchin. Perchin.
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 Perchin. We've all had a crack. Now we're going to hear how you actually say it.
Oh, it's going to be so bad.
Perchin.
And then for those of you who want to know what that means, please do listen to the podcast next week where all will be revealed. That's about it for this week's podcast. Thanks for listening in. And hopefully it hasn't been as painful as it has been for us recording it. Sam, anything interesting to look out for in the paper next week?
Yes, actually, I've been speaking to a remarkable man called Mr. Douglas, who was born in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
He's now living in the island, mm-hmm. but in between, he worked for President Reagan.
Wow!
And
Ronnie!
He worked for Big Ronnie, and you can find out all about that in next week's Examiner.
Oh, I'll be excited about that. Jess, anything interesting to look forward to next week?
So far I've been covering pill rates.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, and there was a fair trade conference as well, so okay. Got to speak to some of the kids there, which was pretty fun.
Right.
Got a bar of chocolate, so that's always.
And when will people be able to see your wonderful work on that?
So that will be in the Examiner.
Next week.
So next week, Tuesday.
So that's on sale Tuesday morning. If you want to get in touch with us throughout the week, at News Podcast on Instagram and, of course, on Twitter. You can subscribe. See if we've piqued your interest in any of these stories this week. Go onto our website, iomtoday.co.im. Look for the digital editions tab, which is quite prominent at the top. And you can look and maybe spend a pound here or there and look at one of our papers online. And, if you want to get in touch with us the old school way, please do write or send a postcard. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'd love that.
To IOM News Podcast at IOM Newspapers, European House, Peel Road, Douglas, IM15ED. And of course, you can ring us.
Yeah, give us a bell.
Sometimes we'll even answer it. But if you're off island, I'm going to throw in case, in case Katie needs some help. She needs the off island code. It'd be +44 for you, Katie, but after that's 01624 695 695.
Do you reckon we could get Katie to send us a postcard? If she's listening,
well, she
will.
She got another week, hasn't she?
Let's have a race between the postcard and Katie.
Yes, that would be fun. But I guess she probably doesn't even listen to us. We're gone now. She's in Colombia, living at large with Pablo Escobar.
Living la vida loca.
Right. Until next week.
Bye for now.